This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 58, with the world's most unlikely anthropologist, Danielle Watson.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things equal.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Angles of Latitude podcast. This is the show where we talk with fellow creators about how they found their true groove in life by doing work that matters not only to them, but others around the world. And every Thursday, we publish another conversation about what it means to live a charged life and how you, too, can capitalize on who you truly are. My name is JC Preston, and today's co-host is Layla Ramadian. And we're part of the team at New Inceptions, a website dedicated in helping creative entrepreneurs do passion-filled work and supporting a lifestyle that matches who they are. This session is powered by Fizzle. You know I love promoting these guys. And why is that? Because it's the most cost-effective way to getting training on the web. And me being an engineer, cost-effective is a big deal. It's like everything you need under one roof. And I mean, you get the roadmap. We've talked about the roadmap, which is basically just-in-time learning. You get, you know, all the beginner stuff right at the front. And then as you move down the road, you get, you know, more pertinent courses as you're going. And then you have the forums where, you know, you have questions. You can leave them there anytime. And then the community actually answers those questions. And through that, I mean, you build meaningful relationships and just, you know, I've had several people from Fizzle actually on this show. And then there's the coaching where you can actually go in every week on Friday, Fizzle Friday, to get personally coached by the staff at Fizzle, which is, you know, it's huge in itself. And then there's the expert courses that actually, if you go to the landing page, are now featured, including Pat Flynn has a course on there. John Lee Dumas has a podcasting course on there. Scott Densmore has a course on there. And, you know, there's plenty of other ones as well. And this is all for $35 a month. And if it doesn't sound like a steal, it should be, because if you're going around the web and there's going to be way, way too many opportunities to spend $1,000 here, $500 there, and oh, this one can do all that for $295. Okay. Well, that's going to add up pretty quickly. And why go to those different places that might be covering the same things where you can just kind of learn everything you need to step by step from one place? But wait, $35 a month, yeah, that'll come, but it'll actually come after this big thing I want to share with you right now, which, as of today's show, I really have no idea how long this promotion is going to last, but after today's show, I get the opportunity to offer you free Fizzle for 5 weeks. And I mean, this is huge. You know, this has been something that they've done in their past through their own show from time to time, but now I can offer this special deal to you guys too. So guys, no more putting off this decision. Get in on this deal. Head on over to newinceptions.com/fizzle and get your first 5 weeks free and really start building your passion-filled business. Again, that's newinceptions.com/F-I-Z-Z-L-E. All right. On this session of the AL podcast, Layla and I get the chance to sit down with a gal by the name of Danielle Watson, and Danielle is known for what she calls the PERS process. It's a way of determining a person's personality based on what was in their purse. And she has been on multiple media outlets discussing the process, including a presentation for TEDx, morning news shows, and even on some pretty popular podcasts, including John Lee Dumas's Entrepreneur on Fire. And in our chat with Danielle, we go behind the scenes about the journey of hers and why she studied anthropology, even though she's a self-professed girly girl, how she stumbled upon the PERS process, and how she prepared for her TEDx presentation, which at the time included a major life change that happened right at the same time. I mean, literally at the same time. What you're going to find out from this chat is that life, as well as business, has its ups and downs, and being successful in both is all about how you navigate those peaks and valleys. Listen to Danielle as she shares her journey to where she's at today, and hopefully it will give you just a bit more fuel to keep you going with yours. Show notes are available at newinceptions.com/58, and I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. My name is JC, and y'all know Layla, my co-host.
Hey!
What's up, Layla?
I'm great. Just finished my workout. I'm high on endorphins.
Yeah?
Endorphins.
Did you get your little snack in so you have energy for the show and all that?
Yes, I do. I got my two smoothies ready to go, my recovery, and I have my after snack, so I'm good to go.
Awesome. Awesome. You just like you had a pretty... You're actually catching up, aren't you? Because didn't you just have a conference that you're kind of...
Yes. I presented at the Platinum Edge. It was a fitness coaching conference, and I just got back 2 nights ago, and it was so, so good. It was just nice meeting around a lot of like-minded people, and we're all doing our own thing in our own light, and I just absolutely loved how I just got more ways of how to help people and find different platforms to do it. So I just have to say I'm really, really stoked. And more importantly, I just love being on the show. And I just love being part of such an amazing team of people that we get to talk to great creators along the way. It's
yeah.
It's been awesome.
Yeah. It's always nice to be able to go to conferences and be around like-minded people and just people that are generally just going all in the same direction. So...
Absolutely. I highly recommend to anybody who's starting their own business to attend conferences that interest them, because you realize you're not alone in the feelings, the hurdles you go through. And they say the best part of going to a conference for entrepreneurs of any form is the people you meet, not necessarily always the speakers, but it's the speakers and people that you talk in between sessions.
Right.
And you know, right now I have like a group of 7 people that we're on a group chat and we're saying, okay, let's rewrite our notes. Let's talk about what we learned and let's do brain dumps. And
yeah.
And it's what's more important is it's a safe place. Like when you meet people who are starting a small business, you automatically know what it's like for someone to take your idea or feel that sense of, oh, if I share this with someone, will they steal it? It's like, no, we get it. We share it. We support it and we protect. It's a safe environment. So I that's what I liked ever since I started being an entrepreneur is you don't have to worry about, I guess, how do you say, you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, just other people taking your ideas, because they're, for one, most people are actually too busy working on their own to constantly bounce from idea to idea to idea.
So
and another thing is that, you know, the thing about conferences is especially if it's informational conferences, it's highly important that you actually apply what you've learned there. Otherwise, you're just going there for the entertainment value, which is probably not the best use of your money.
Oh, absolutely. It's like you hit the nail on the dot. Honestly,
yep.
It's you're so busy trying to start your own platform that you don't have time to steal other people's ideas. But also, it's good to bounce ideas off of each other and make it your own. Like I could go on and on about this. It was so good. So it's so good to reflect, rewrite, retype your notes when you go to an informative conference, because it's like you said, it's could be just entertainment and you spend all that money for what?
Right.
You gotta apply it.
Exactly. But speaking of conferences and, you know, local TEDx events are, you know, they're a great place to meet up and with actually upcoming stars. And even if you're not speaking, and
However, if you do get the chance to speak, it's definitely going to be, it's going to look good on your resume, no doubt about it. And many of our guests, including our friends Cam, Ginger, and even a recent guest, Barrett Brooks, you know, they've all done TEDx presentations themselves. And today's guest, Danielle Watson, she's no different, has been a TEDx presenter herself. And it was all about helping people learn about others using archaeology principles, which she actually calls the PERSE process. And she's been not only on TEDx, but of numerous other media formats as well, including John Lane Dumas's Entrepreneur on Fire, where she actually talks about that. And yeah, true pleasure having her on today's show. And Danielle, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Real excited to have you. And, you know, to both you, both Layla and myself, very inspirational because, you know, we're both examples of people who have studied one thing in school, and even actually both of us have advanced degrees like yourself and now do work that's not typically of what those people would reflect if they went the traditional route. And Layla, especially.
Yes.
So let's kind of start from college. You know, you call yourself a girly girl. Why did you pick a major in anthropology and archaeology in the first place?
Well, first of all, yay for us misfits all finding one another and being in the same space together.
Yes.
But yeah, way back in college, if we go back in the time machine, I chose anthropology and archaeology because I wanted to understand the world around me better. I wanted to understand human beings, why they did what they did, where we came from, maybe get some insight into where we were going. Everything about humans and the human condition just completely fascinated me. And somehow I was able to suspend the thought of what that career would look like. I was really just there for the theory. So sometimes I like to refer to myself as a theoretical anthropologist or a theoretical archaeologist. Back in school, I remember we would study the early, quote, anthropologists and archaeologists, which were basically men in Britain sitting in their smoking lounge who had never actually been anywhere, who would write treatises and papers on exotic lands based on conversations that they'd had with people who'd actually been there, sailors and things like that. And they were called armchair anthropologists. And that was sort of who I envisioned myself to be, a modern day female armchair anthropologist. But when you graduate, you find out that that's not true. You're actually expected to go out and dig in the dirt or go out and study a developing society or some niche of inner city life. And that just wasn't for me. But somehow I was young and naive enough to think that I could just study this for the information and really not worry about that whole how would I apply it piece.
Yeah, we in session 51, we actually had Veronica Kieran on, and she got her major in social anthropology. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she sounds very, very similar to what at least what you probably would have gone for had it been in existence, maybe. But, you know, the thing is, I guess, why not? Is there any difference between once you ended up learning versus, say, someone that might study sociology? Or, I mean,
you know, anthropology has different branches to it. So there's physical anthropology that studies more your anatomy. A lot of times you'll see that in police-based shows on TV, like forensic anthropology. It has a linguistic branch. It has the social branch, which studies culture. And then it, so if you look at sociology, it's much more niched, where anthropology is much larger and also encompasses archaeology as well. So it's a broader subject matter. And the way we like to describe anthropology is it studies human beings throughout space and time. So we study ancient humans, we study modern humans, we study their things, their bodies, and their interactions and language.
Okay, gotcha. So, okay, that makes a lot of sense. In other words, sociology much larger, and anthropology is more of a specialist sort of thing. Okay. That said, Would you do it all over again? Now, what you know now.
Well, you know, I've asked myself that question many times. I tell you, there are days where I wish I'd made different decisions and I could just go to my corporate job every day and know that I was getting a paycheck regardless of whether I produced anything that anybody wanted to buy or not. But for the most part, I would do it again because I learned so much by following what I was interested in and passionate in. And it took me on a road through life that I just don't see any other way that I could have traveled it. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that you asked me in the beginning, you know, why did I choose that major? And my answer will always be because I wanted to understand humans. But now that I'm older, now that I've been on this path for a long time, I have a greater capacity for self-reflection. What I recognize as a fully grown up, is that what I was actually looking for in those very young years was to understand myself. I was studying other people and other cultures and other collections of things that belonged to other people, trying to figure out who I was. What was my history? What was my place in the world? Where was I going? Where did I fit in? And that has been invaluable to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I would pretty much be able to say the same thing as far as my trajectory through, you know, undergrad and grad school and all that. So yeah, definitely there on it. So, I mean, that being all said, what kind of advice would you give to someone who's, you know, going into college today? Maybe they're not even sure that they're going into the right major.
You know, it's interesting. I have siblings who are much younger than myself. One is 14 years younger than me and one is 16 years younger than me. And especially the one who is 16 years younger than me, I gave a lot of thought to that question as he was graduating from high school and looking at going into college. And so there's two pieces of advice I would give. One would be that, you know, unless you really want to be a doctor or something that requires a specific training to do it, consider taking that money that you would spend on college and use it to receive life experiences or technical training that will allow you to have your own business or support other people who are having their own businesses. I really feel like the cost of college today is so exorbitant that same money can really be used to get somebody started in a really amazing business. And the other piece of advice I would give is if you do decide to go the traditional route and go to a university, go and study what just draws you, what lights you up, the thing that you are so excited to crack open the books and dive into. It may not make sense at the time. And certainly I had people telling me when I was in my 20s or late teens, early 20s that like my degree was a throwaway degree and it was like the stupidest major ever. And I just didn't listen to them because I was so passionate about it and so interested in it. I just was like, yeah, I rationally, logically, I know you guys are right, but there has to be a reason I feel so passionate about this. And, you know, it did take a good while for me to figure out how it was going to serve me, how it was going to come back around to be an asset to me. But, oh my gosh, I would be such a different person if I hadn't taken that road. And I wouldn't have built the same confidence in myself and my ability to make decisions and to follow, you know, what mattered to me in life.
Right.
I'm so glad that you listened to your inner gut because that is so important to not get peer pressured, you would say, to do something you traditionally should do because you'd be miserable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I know a lot of my friends that got the, you know, this engineering degree and they went into their traditional routes and a lot of them are miserable. So.
I love that Jim Carrey commencement speech where he talks about his father who could have been a great comedian, but he became an accountant because that was the safe thing to do. Yeah. And then at some point he lost his job. And, you know, his point was you can fail at doing something that you're really good at, but you can also fail at something you hate. So why not at least give it a go to do the thing that you're passionate about because it might turn out really well for you.
I actually did listen to a section of that speech. I need to go find it now that you mention it because I you know, you'd be surprised. Like, I'm even impressed that Jim Carrey had a good speech because he's funny. You never thought that he had something of value to share to kids about following your passion. Sorry, Jim Carrey, but I love you, and I love you more now that you showed something very honest. That's so good. It's so true. So true. Fail at what you're good at, not what you're supposed to do or what you're expected to do. You mentioned, Danielle, that you were different from everyone else that you knew, and I can totally relate to you on that. And because I went to engineering school, I knew I didn't, like, quote, belong or fit the mold. And how did that make you feel while you were in college? Because you said in your TEDx speech that you knew and everyone else knew that you didn't fit the mold. And tell me about that more.
Yeah, so that was one of the scariest moments in my life when I talked about that in my TEDx, because I actually sang a few bars of "One of these things is not like the other," because that's what was going through my mind when I was sitting there at this like long table with all these construction worker type dudes. And here's me. I'm this little like 5'1" girly girl in a dress, and it made me feel like I must be a little bit crazy to be there. And it did reinforce what people in my life who had, you know, all the best intentions for me, but what people in my life were saying to me, which is, this doesn't make sense for you to do this. There was nothing about it that was logical or rational. And I kept sitting there anyways, because I felt like that's where I wanted to be.
Good. So when you realized that you weren't going to fit the mold, did it ever changed your mind whatsoever? That did you ever have a moment of doubt that maybe you should change your major while you're in school? Like, did you ever get that position that, like, did you ever, if, since you knew that you didn't fit the mold, did it ever make you think about changing your major? And eventually, did you ever get that position that did you ever get an archaeology or anthropology position after your studies?
Well, one would think that I would have had that thought and considered more rational options, but I am that extreme idealist, and I just kept telling myself, oh, this will all work out. This will be fine. It'll be okay. And then when I graduated, it was interesting. I finished my graduate degree, and at the same time, my would become my husband was moving across the country for a job, and I moved with him, and I'd lived on the West Coast my whole life, and we were moving to the East Coast, and I was just finishing school, and I'd been in school my whole life, and I, you know, I had this degree that I'd paid tens of thousands of dollars for, but I had no, you know, real job opportunities, and I got out here, and I got really depressed because my whole identity was wrapped up in being in school and studying, and suddenly I wasn't in school and I wasn't studying anymore, and I didn't know who I was, and I didn't have any prospects of being anything other than what I'd been before I went to college, which was, you know, having a receptionist job or going to work at a outlet mall or something. And it was that moment of like, what have I done? It's too late. I can't do anything about it, but what have I done? And maybe those people were right, and maybe I am, you know, not that intelligent, and I shouldn't have followed my idealism, and I shouldn't have followed my heart. And it was very, very difficult for me to come to that place where, you know, it looked like everybody else had been right and I had been wrong.
Right.
So I never did work as an anthropologist or an archaeologist until I started my own business, when I started applying those skills in an unconventional way.
And I'm really excited to hear about this.
Yeah, how did you actually go about, you know, turning on the idea of like, I have these skills that I can actually add value to others? I mean, where did that first spark come from?
Oh, well, you know, I wish that I could say there is a book out there that I bought from Amazon and it was delivered to me, and I magically pulled out my journal and my beautiful pen and I filled out all of the exercises in the worksheet, and it told me exactly what I was supposed to do with my life and how I was supposed to use my skills. I really wish I could say that, but that's actually not how it happened. So for me, what happened was, I don't want to back you up too far because there's a lot of story before this happened, but essentially what happened is I was an entrepreneur. I decided to start a different business, and I needed a copywriter to write the copy for my new website. And as she was interviewing me to write the copy for that website, she asked me the question that just about every entrepreneur who's starting out really hates to be asked, which is, who is your ideal client and how will you recognize her? And when I get asked an annoying question that I don't know the answer to, I answer with sarcasm. And so in that moment, I flipped back to her. Well, I could look through her purse, and I was just being ridiculous, even though I knew it was true. I just was making a flippant answer. There was nothing behind it, no great insight. And instead of her, you know, laughing with me, she got quiet for a second and went, "What do you mean by that?" And I said, "Well, you know, people's stuff, it tells a story about them. You can understand yourself or other people based on the things you carry around, and your purse is just like this living archaeological collection of your life in any moment and time." And she was just like mind blown that to her, that was something she'd never thought about. She couldn't hardly believe that I could do it. She quickly sent me over a photo of the contents of her purse. When I said that, you know, that was how I would do it. And I basically proceeded to tell this person I didn't know very well a whole lot of things about her deep thoughts and her inner self and how she behaves in different situations and how she values herself and what she believes about the world. And she just was continually blown away. And she was like, "That's really cool. You should do that." And of course, me being a person who already probably had a little bit of a facility with doing that, had been trained in archaeology class and to look at stuff and extrapolate information about what it means and how it relates to other things and how it relates to the people who used it. This just was like the most normal, natural thing in the world. I could do this all day. I could have 3 martinis and still do this. This was not a big deal. But to her, she thought this was amazing. And so I thought, well, that's cool that she thinks it's cool. Maybe I could, you know, start doing this for fun and like doing some research on what this is, because I love research. I love having an excuse to study other humans and why they do what they do. And so I just kind of started asking any woman who would let me whether I could look through her purse and tell her a few things about herself. And people just thought this was really interesting. But The problem was that I started getting a reputation as a purse psychic. Yeah. People did not understand that I was using the skills of an archaeologist to kind of pick apart what I was seeing in there. And so, yeah, I got this reputation as this purse psychic, which I really didn't like, even though I'm big into intuition. I love energy healing. I love people who are intuitive. Some of my best friends are highly intuitive people. I didn't feel like I was getting the respect I deserved because it really was based on this traditional scientific approach. And so I had to figure out a way to show people that I wasn't just like reading tea leaves basically mm-hmm. through their purse.
Yeah.
And that's when I really created the purse process as a brand. And I started calling it the purse process. I created 4 purse process personality archetypes so that when I was explaining what I was seeing to people, they could see that there were categories and there were predictable patterns that showed up. And it also made things easier for me because I didn't have to reinvent the wheel every time. But people being able to self-identify which category they fell into, or for me to show that this was a recurring pattern and it connected with these other thoughts or behaviors, is really what led to the brand growing legs and just starting to run around on its own, because people then understood, oh my goodness, she is taking what archaeologists and anthropologists do. And she's just moved it into this new context. And they loved it because here I am, this girly girl. I have applied it to a context that interests me, that's perfect for me. And then I was able to start making money and building a business on it. And that was just mind-blowing to so many people.
Wow. Yeah. One of the things that, so my grad degree was actually in leadership organization. And wait, hold on, back up, reverse. Organizational leadership and supervision. And one of the things that we talked about all the time, and that is personalities. And so that was when I became familiar with the whole Jungian 16 Myers-Briggs thing, which I'm sure you probably know about now.
Oh, yeah.
And then from that, I was never really so much a fan of that. And then I stumbled upon the DISC profile. And then I was like, that makes a little bit more sense. It's like people can tend to fit in there, because with the Myers-Briggs, I kind of pop around like different personality types depending on like what day it is, just about. And so anyway, going over to DISC, I started studying that quite a bit. And then I ran into some information through a past coach of mine that he actually had this way of finding out what people were just by some questions that he would ask. And so anyway, as I was studying with him and based on what the stuff that I'd already known, and this is actually something that I'm recently talking to Layla about, she brought up in the pre-show, is that I can more or less just kind of go down the road and be like, she's wearing gray, she's not very fashionable, but what she's wearing can be worn for about 5 years. She's this kind of personality. Whereas, you know, maybe the expressive personality would actually be like, oh, you know, totally on top of style and everything. And maybe, you know, next year they're going to get a whole new wardrobe or something like that. So, you know, really what you're saying about digging into someone's purse is very, very true, because I guess in a way that I can visually do that as I'm looking at someone. So, oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really curious now what you see in my purse. I really do. I really want to know. I want to know. And also, JC, we can talk about this later, but what did you see in my wardrobe? Because I don't want you to tell her about me, JC, because I want her to figure this out, and then I'll see if you are right, and then I'll be so amazed, because I totally want to know what you think when you see my purse.
Alrighty.
Yeah, because it's small.
Oh, I probably see. This is so great. You already told me I don't even need to see it. So you are going to fall into one of two categories. So there, like I said, there are four purse process personalities, and I have a guess of which one you would fall into just based on that. But the first one is the Dumpster Debbie profile. We all know her. She has the giant bag. It's weighing her down. It's got everything but the kitchen sink in it. You're clearly not her. The second one is Vanishing Veronica. This woman usually carries a black or a brown bag. It's usually fairly small, but sometimes it's larger. It's very nondescript on the outside, and on the inside, it is full of colorful, wonderful things that express her and represent her. The third purse process personality profile is Absent Abigail, and I'm going to guess you fall into this one. Usually it's a wristlet or a very small purse or maybe no purse at all. It just holds the minimal number of very necessary items. And the fourth one is Perfect Priscilla, and that is a woman who carries usually a designer handbag. It has to have the matching wallet. If it's not designer, it's usually because she can't afford it. But I'm going to guess you fall into the Absent Abigail profile. So what's wonderful about an Absent Abigail profile is that she's very efficient. She's very effective. She can do more in less time than anybody else. Her challenges are is that sometimes people treat her like she doesn't have feelings and like she doesn't have limits that need to be respected.
Very good. Very good. I want to know. It sounds like we're amongst those last two categories. Really true. Very, very true. Yeah. Maybe we could talk about that afterwards. I'd love to know actually showing you, but if that's something that you're still doing, you love that.
Sure. I'd be happy to do it for you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Of course.
Oh, awesome. So, Danielle, so after we just, I think that's really cool that you can easily analyze somebody based on their purse, but also being more than just that, having a archetype system that really can resonate with people. And it's actually a tool that people can learn about other people, not just coming to you, learning about them and moving on. It's actually like a tool for them to use for other people that they are surrounded by.
I think my wife wants me to be a dumpster Devi, actually, but so she doesn't have to carry everything. But
yeah, but it's just really cool, and I love that because my mom studied archaeology and anthropology, but she never got a job in it. But she's been using that degree every single day when it comes to talking to people based on their personalities, and so it has been something that she's been using, but not to the next level of what you're doing is starting a business, which is so cool. I cannot wait to tell my mom about this. She probably would want to learn more about it and see, and it'd be so cool. But now I want to talk about the next topic, and that is TEDx. How did you decide to go on TEDx? I think that is so cool. Tell me about your experience.
Well, thank you. You know, it was a very cool experience. And it's interesting because I did not decide to go on TEDx. I didn't realize I had anything that was worthy of TEDx. What I did do was I started traveling around the country on what I called my purse process on tour. I would literally get on a plane, land in a city, and start networking with people and talking to people and sharing what I did and talking about it and refining how I talked about it as I went. And so I met a lot of people in a lot of different walks of life. And I remember one evening I went to a networking event, and I'm not much of an evening person, and I'm actually very much an introvert. I'm an introvert with an outgoing personality, so I can turn it on, but man, does it drain me. So this one evening I am in Phoenix, Arizona, and it's evening. I really want to go to bed because I've been out networking and doing things all day, but I drag myself to this event anyways, and it happens to be at a bar, and it's really loud, and to talk to anybody, you have to shout, and I stayed maybe an hour, probably a little bit less than that, and when I walked out, I sat in my car, and I put my hands on the steering wheel, and I set my head down on the steering wheel, and I just cried. Because I was so tired. I was running myself so ragged. I had to yell for an hour. And I was just like, never again. You are not going to push yourself this hard to make yourself successful. This isn't worth it. You know, yes, you have to be a go-getter. And yes, you have to overcome your fears. And yes, sometimes you have to do things you don't want to do. But you are a wreck right now. And you're never going to do this again. So fast forward months later. And of course, I'm thinking I didn't make any quality connections there because I, you know, was basically a mess and couldn't wait to get out of there and was just like, you could see my energy just draining out of me as I was talking to people. So fast forward months later, I get a Facebook message from one of the ladies that I had met there. And she said, hey, would you be interested in TEDx? And I was like, oh, yeah, you know, I love TED. I love TEDx. That's cool. Yeah, I'm interested in it, thinking she's going to send me a video or something. And then she said, I mean, would you be interested in coming to speak? And I was like, do you mean like MC the event? Like, I'm not entirely sure what you're asking me here. And finally, she just clarified and came right out and she said, I want you to be a TEDx speaker. I am nominating you for this. I think what you do is so cool and so outside the box. We want you to come and be on this stage. And I was just blown away. I could not believe it. This had happened out of what felt like one of the most draining, horrendous nights of my life. I had still managed to make an impression on this woman that lasted. And so I didn't have to go through any of the paperwork. I didn't have to go through any of the rigmarole to apply. The velvet red rope was literally lifted for me, and I got to do it. And it was incredible. It's one of those moments where you're just like, somebody up there is watching over me.
That's amazing.
So how did you prepare for it?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so for anybody that has not done a TEDx, what you don't realize, it happens slowly, is it becomes your part-time job to prepare for this because you know it's a big deal. And unless you're already very much a comfortable public speaker, you're going to need a lot of practice. So leading up to it, I practiced in the mirror. I practiced into a microphone. I practiced with friends. I practiced over the phone. I practiced. At the end, I think I was practicing like 7 to 12 times a day. It was absolutely insane. It took over all my time. I couldn't eat, sleep, or do anything without thinking about my talk. And it's funny because when you get up on stage, you still don't deliver it exactly the way you'd planned. I mean, I even got down to making sure I did like a dress rehearsal in my heels and my dress and everything to make sure I was going to be comfortable up there. But, you know, with all the preparation that I did, you know, life doesn't stop. And so I was still doing my business and I was still trying to go to yoga class because I wanted to look great in my dress. And about 48 hours before I was to get up on this big stage that I was terrified of because I'm an introvert and I don't really love speaking on stage, I came home from yoga class. I have my yoga mat rolled up under my arm and bringing it in. I'm all sweaty and I look up at my door and I see there are divorce papers taped to my front door. So,
oh my gosh.
48 hours I have to deal with that and to get up on that stage anyways. And in that moment, I was just like, I don't think I can do this. I honestly don't know if I can do this. So the first thing I do is I rip the papers off the door and I go inside and like think to myself, oh my gosh, did the neighbors see? This is so embarrassing. This is so awful. And then that same voice inside of me that back in college said, you know, keep following this path, keep getting this degree. I know it doesn't make sense. Just keep doing it. That same voice came up inside of me and said, don't make any decisions right now. Finish your day. Call an attorney. Finish your day.
Yeah.
Go to sleep. And, you know, like my mom always says, and I think a lot of moms say, things will look better in the morning. And I thought, I don't know how this is going to be better in the morning, but okay. And so so I did, and I went to sleep that night. And the next morning, I was like, okay, what am I going to do? I haven't breathed a word of this to anybody. I haven't really given it any thought because I really did force myself to just go about my day and, you know, sleep on it. So that same voice inside of me was just like, if you can do this, you can do anything. And you yeah. will know your own power for the rest of your life. And I just felt that inside me. I was like, yes, if I can get up and I can get on that stage and I can deliver this talk, that is like the ultimate, I am in control of my life and I get to decide what happens in my life. And I felt like, okay, that's the decision I'm making. I'm making the decision. I'm going to get up there, but I cannot do it pretending that everything is okay. I cannot get up there and smile and pretend that my life is normal and that I'm not hurting and that I'm not in a weak place. And so I actually called my mom first, of course, to tell her what had happened, and she supported me. And then I went, you know what? I need all the support I can get. So I got on my Facebook page and I posted that I needed help with courage. And I told people, you know, yesterday I came home to these divorce papers. It was very upsetting. I'm having the full range of emotions that you can imagine. I don't want to talk about it right now. What I want is to focus on this amazing opportunity to be part of TEDx and to connect with all these other amazing, intelligent people who have come together to put on this event, to speak at this event, to support this event. So what I need from my community, if anybody who supports me, I just need you to take your phone out and for 1 minute. I need you to set that timer for 1 minute. And I need you to envision me getting on that stage and delivering my talk and just shining with everything I have in me. And I had people coming out of the woodwork saying, you know, I'm sending you good vibes. I believe in you. You can do this. I'm sending you angels. You know, whatever it is you need, I'm here for you. I will do this. And that surge of everybody supporting me through my weakest, most heinous moment I have had in my life, that gave me what I needed to be able to be like, you know what, this is my reality. This very painful thing is my reality. I'm not going to pretend it isn't, but I'm still going to get on that stage and I'm still going to have that moment because I prepared for it. I'm ready to do it. And all these people are supporting me and I can, because they will hold me up when I cannot. And so I did. And if you watch the talk or if you see any of the pictures of me, I am glowing. I mean, I am just so happy and I'm so in the moment and I am so proud to be honored with being there. I was so proud to be honored with being the opening speaker that day. It was just such an amazing experience to reveal that I was vulnerable, that things were not okay, and have people I didn't even know just saying, whatever you need, yes.
Oh, that's awesome. That is like, I'm just shedding a tear right now because that is so, I can only imagine the emotions you're going through, and having known people who have been through that, it is very hard, but it makes you stronger.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, so here's a question. Chronologically, the TEDx was your last big media event, or have you been doing things since then? I mean, where are you at now? Because it seems to me that you obviously kind of, we were talking about that you wanted to, you're looking to do a pivot. In fact, you're writing a book on this experience of yours. Where are you going really right now? What's your direction?
Yeah, so that was my big media event, my last big media event for Purse Process. I've done some other smaller interviews and things like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've really been looking to do a pivot over this last year. So fast forward to about 2 weeks later after my TED Talk, you know, I'm back. The high of TED is gone. Everyone checking on me all the time is gone. I'm in the reality of I'm on the divorce train and I cannot get off.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Right.
Yeah. And so about 2 weeks later was actually my husband's 40th birthday. And we'd been together since he was 23 years old. And that day, I knew he was turning 40. I was so sad because we were not spending it together. And, you know, all the things that were happening. And I was just having this terrible day. And I walked by the mirror in my bedroom and I turned and I looked at myself and I was just like, I love you so much. And I am so proud of you for all that you've done and the grace with which you have handled this. And, you know, you are an amazing human being. And just like all this positive self-talk came out and I was looking straight in my own eyes and I thought, I don't want to forget this. And so I got on Facebook and I wrote a little note to self, what I called little note to self. It was dear self and all those sorts of things that I just said. And then it said, love me. And my friend Donna saw it and she said, hey, I love what you just wrote. Would it be okay if I print it out and put it on my bathroom mirror? And I was like, yeah, of course. Like, please. I'm so happy that, you know, my crappy day helped you feel better about yourself and that it inspired you a little bit. And so I thought, oh, maybe I should write a few of these little like positive self-talk things to me. And then people really liked them. And at some point, I decided I was going to write them every day for a year. And just a couple weeks ago, I finished that project. I have 365 plus one because last year was a leap year. Notes to self that I've collected into what will first be an ebook and then a print book. And I'm also writing a memoir about my experience and how I, you know, was able to make it through that year and use it as a challenge that built my strength rather than something that beat me down. So that's where I'm headed next.
Wow. Wow. Would you, going back to your different media pieces, would you say that the success that you've had there has been based on your TEDx presentation, or was your TEDx presentation, you had mentioned that you were on a tour, were those just part of your tour? How did you, I mean, that is a collection of interviews that you've had over the time that you've been
yes.
doing
that. I've been so fortunate to be on so many shows. So because my PERS process and it being based on archaeology is so unique, most of those opportunities, like 95% of them, happened before my TEDx.
Okay.
People heard about what I did and just thought it was really cool, invited me to be on their show, or somebody else knew what I did and reached out to somebody who had a show and said, you've got to have this woman on your show. This is so cool. We need people to hear about that. So a lot of it just happened organically. There were, you know, one or two where I did reach out to somebody and say, hey, you know, I'd like to be on your show. Entrepreneur on Fire was an interesting experience. It was actually the first podcast interview I did. Mm-hmm. And I put it off for months because I actually didn't know what it was. And I didn't know it was a big deal. And I was so glad afterwards that I didn't, because I wasn't all like nervous to do it. I was just like, oh, this guy has a podcast. Somebody had reached out to him and say, hey, you need to have her on your show. And he contacted me and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm on tour right now. I'll get back to you. And it was like 2 months later.
Wow.
So I still got on the show. I was very lucky. But yeah, complete ignorance of what a big deal that was. And of course, that opened up a lot of opportunities for me. You know, John Lee Dumas and his Entrepreneur on Fire has a huge following. And so many other podcasters listen to that and they'll hear you on there and be like, oh, I loved your show. Will you come be on my show? And so then, yes, I would, of course. I love doing interviews and giving out information and inspiration for people.
Nice. Okay. No, I was just kind of curious. It's just like trying to make sense of everything that was going on without, you know,
I didn't talk about when I did the morning news. That was very interesting. So that happened as a part of my tour. I met somebody who had a connection to somebody who was at a news station, actually in Arizona. I live in the Washington, D.C. area. And so that person contacted me and said, hey, would you like to be on the morning news? And I was like, yeah, I live in D.C. You know, I'll fly out. And they were like, well, just next time you're in town. I was like, no, if you're going to put me on the news, I'm going to fly out. And so I got on a plane. I flew out. I did the morning news. I had a couple margaritas and tacos while I was in Arizona. And then I came home.
Wow.
What was that about? What was that morning show about?
It was called The Morning Scramble. And what I did was I took the host and the show's producer's handbags and I dumped them out on live TV. And I know one of them was really, really full of stuff. It was interesting. Dumped them out on live TV, went through their bags and told them which PERS process personality profile they were. And they loved it. And that was such an amazing experience. You know, I didn't know... I'd never been on camera before like that. I didn't know what I was doing. My theme in life is that when you receive an opportunity, you just do it. I think there's a wonderful Richard Branson quote where he says it much better, where it's like, if somebody offers you to do something that you don't know how to do, say yes and figure out how to do it later. And I have done that repeatedly in life.
Yeah. That's awesome. That is so, like, it's like being a PERS psychic, but you're adding, correct me if I'm wrong, it's like you are being a PERS psychic, but you're not stopping at that point. You're being more than just that.
I would say I'm just coming at it from a more academic, systemic standpoint. Because based on intuition. It's more understanding the relationship between things. Like, I don't know how old you guys are, but if I was to hold up a cassette tape and a pencil, would you know what the relationship between those two things is?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you wind
it
up.
Yeah. So, yeah, you wind it up with that. So it's kind of like that. It's just understanding what the relationships between things are through extensive study.
Well, I guess since I'm an engineer, I don't do a per psychic based on intuition. I use my facts. So mm-hmm. I guess my definition of a psychic is someone who has the knowledge and the skills and the facts to put two and two together and maybe dig deeper than that. So to someone who doesn't have that background in archaeology, anthropology, they think of you as a psychic because they don't know that it's not always intuition. It's sometimes education.
Right. Yeah. So. It's interesting. Everybody understands quantitative data analytics, and very few people understand qualitative data analytics, which is basically what I'm doing. I'm taking a lot of qualitative data and I'm analyzing it and I'm giving you meaning out of it.
That's perfect. And I apologize if that's the word that you don't like to hear. So
that's okay. I'm used to it.
Okay.
Okay.
Maybe there's another word we could use later on.
So, Danielle, as we're approaching the hour here, going to have to go into rapid-fire questions. Are you ready?
I will do my best.
All right. What are three of your favorite podcasts that you would like to tell other people about?
Oh, I love Excellence Expected. That is hosted by Mark Asquith. He is amazing, and he has an awesome British accent that all of us ladies love to listen to. So I highly recommend that to anybody who is interested in business.
Just keep talking.
Exactly. Yes. It's so true.
By the way, season 4 of Sherlock's coming out. Just letting you know. Sorry.
Keep going. It's okay. The second one I would recommend would be Sports Gal Pal with Ramona Rice. That is just completely fun and interesting. And how often do you find a female sports podcaster? Mm-hmm. Definitely check that one out. And then Trivial Warfare with Jonathan Oakes. If you like trivia, that is the show to listen to. He really keeps it moving and entertaining, has different topics, different ways he runs the show. So definitely check that out.
Yeah, I'm always looking for podcasts anymore that are not business related, because when you just have a whole bunch of business stuff, then you have way too many ideas floating in your head. And it's just like, I can't listen to these anymore. It's like, it's overload. So yeah, I'm definitely looking for some things out there that are more just ways for my mind to be creative, but not business. Cool. What's the secret to achieving personal freedom?
Personal freedom is achieved through building real confidence in yourself and knowing that whatever life brings, you are going to be able to handle it. You are free to make the choices that you want to make.
Nice. Like that. What is something you believed as a 35-year-old that you'd now tell yourself is completely wrong, and why?
Ooh, as a 35-year-old pre-divorce, I would have said that love conquers all. And I don't believe that anymore. I believe that for marriage to work, you have to have both love and respect.
So, Danielle, what is one thing that is under $100 that has changed your life?
I'm so glad you got to ask me this question, Layla, because my answer is a tube of red lipstick.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, when I finally bought a tube of red lipstick, I suddenly started enjoying taking selfies, because every woman looks better in a photograph in red lipstick. And when you have your own business, you need to be putting yourself out there and taking photos. And that just gave me the confidence I needed to be able to snap those photos anytime. Even if I am in my gym clothes or my hair is not great, man, you put that red lipstick on and you are ready to rock.
That's awesome. I actually need to buy lipstick now that you said that. I always thought I looked bad in it, but maybe I'm just using the wrong tint.
Yes, you got to find the right tint for you. It's different for everybody, but there is a shade of red that looks rocking on every woman.
Okay. I'm going to go check that out because I have like lip gloss and nude colored lipstick. But you're right. I need to find the right shade. What does it mean to have a life of abundance?
For me, having a life of abundance means being able to recognize all of the small happinesses and gifts that are around you all day, every day. I mean, anybody who's able to listen to this recording has so much, and it's really just a matter of tuning your focus to all the amazing things that are already around you.
Really well said.
Yeah. Cool. All right. If someone is trying to put their knowledge to use in a new business, what are some steps you'd recommend they do?
Well, the first thing I would recommend is to look at the skills that you have that you think you can't use in your new business and really try to reframe that in your mind. Look at those things as things you could use in an unconventional way. If you need help, ask somebody to look at your skill set and sort of help you tinker with the idea, because it's so interesting when people are starting a new business, they really think that they're a beginner and they're starting over and they're coming with a clean slate. But most of us have a lifetime of experience. And sometimes the most interesting and fun and fulfilling work we can do is taking that skill set that we already have developed to a very high level and just applying it in a new context that's more satisfying.
Got it.
Thank you so much for coming on today, Danielle. And if anybody has any more questions, where can people find you for additional help?
Yeah, you guys can find me at purseprocess.com. I'm also very active on Facebook. So if you search for Danielle Watson and send me a friend request, as long as you don't look like the boogeyman, I will accept it and we can start developing a relationship together.
Cool. All right. Well, again, total pleasure having you on today, and thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Danielle.
Thanks, JC and Leela. Bye.
And there you have it. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Danielle. I love how she's been able to persevere through not only being ostracized in her studies, but also going through a very untimely divorce. I mean, you know, divorce isn't anything people sign up for, and it can definitely be something that completely alters you are for life, good and bad. I think Danielle has used it for good, and she's used it as a wake-up call. And that's really what you have to do when something negative happens in your life like that, whether it's divorce, the death of a loved one, or simply losing a great job. You can't dwell on it, but you can definitely leverage the silver linings that come out of your experience. If you want to connect with Danielle yourself, you can do that through the show notes at newinceptions.com/58. And today's show note extras include Danielle's TEDx talk, as well as her interview with Mamika Cooney about silencing your inner critic. I also included a sample of her Facebook Live show and her chat with John Lee Dumas. Again, thank you so much for joining us today. If you've been listening to the show for a while, let us know what you think. Leave a review on iTunes or send us your emails and suggestions at heyguys@newinceptions.com. Also, don't forget to like us on Twitter and Facebook. In next week's chat, I'm joined again by Clay Green to speak with a really interesting YouTuber by the name of Drew Badger. And Drew is the founder of English Anyone, and is really a great example of taking a skill you already have and knowing how to utilize it in a way that gives value to others. And some of the videos on YouTube have been viewed near a million times, which is no small feat. In our chat, we discuss how he got into the business of teaching English, what he believes has contributed to his success on YouTube, and some things you can do yourself to be successful on YouTube. So come back for that one, as I'm sure it's going to help those of you who are interested in leveraging video as a medium to get your message out into the wild. So that's it, guys. Thanks again for joining Danielle, Leela, and myself. And until next time, dig in, have fun, and take care. I will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter @newinceptions, or on the web at newinceptions.com.